Just getting ready. All right, thanks. Bye. Bill Avery's logging in, so he should be here in a minute.
Hmm.
Jeff Bill's non-video.
That's okay. I did test my camera too, so I don't know what's going on.
Maybe you need a haircut.
I do need a haircut.
Yeah. I'm overdue. Oh, there's Cecilia. Admit her.
And Cecilia is muted.
There you are.
Ah, video and everything.
Just about. I'm trying to fix my background. But good morning.
Good morning.
There's a picture of a pond behind you.
Yeah, and I'm not at the farm, so I need to have a different video.
You need the Grand Canyon behind you, right?
I was at the Grand Canyon, and now I'm in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, wow.
Well, you can
have
that.
I saw my dad for the first time in a year. It was very wonderful.
That's cool.
Oh, I know what I need to do. I need to have the light on the other one. Do we have everybody?
Not quite. We're waiting for Bill Avery.
To my right. there's Jeff.
Hey. So now just Bill Avery. I suppose we can just go ahead and get started.
There's
because
Bill just logged on. I got him. There he is.
All right.
He's in the waiting room. So there he is. Bill Avery's here. All right.
Good morning.
So according to my team, we have all the board members, Christy Jenkins, Bill Avery, and Jeff Henry present, and then myself and Smoke.
Okay, so I hereby call the October 21st meeting of the Cambria Community Healthcare District to order at 9:06 a.m. We won't do a Pledge of Allegiance because there is no flag present. In establishing a quorum, we have already determined that all directors are present. So we can proceed to public comment for items not on the agenda, and we have one member of the public here. Christy, do you have any comments that you want to share with us for items not on the agenda?
Thank you for letting me attend the meeting, and I'm just going to be following the agenda.
Okay.
Welcome.
So hearing no public comment, we go to the consent agenda, approval of minutes of the September 8th special board meeting, and approval of the minutes of the September 17th, 2020 regular board meeting. I would entertain any discussion, or if no discussion, then a motion to accept those and put them in the record.
I move to accept them and put them in the record.
I second.
Would you ensure there's no public comment, please?
I did. Maybe
I'm not on consent.
Oh, you mean a public comment with respect to the consent agenda?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Is there any public comment with respect to the approval of the September 8th or September 17th meetings? Hearing none, the motion to approve the minutes has been made by Director Montalvo and seconded by Director Rice. Simone, will you take a roll call vote, please?
Vicki Fedorov?
Aye.
Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray?
We didn't hear.
Yes. Oh.
Okay.
Lori Millior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Now we move on to the operations report. And Tim Bennis is not here, so Mike,
yes,
you want to handle that?
Yes. You have Tim's report in your packet. Let me see if are, as I look through this to see if there's anything that stands out, are there any comments up front based on what you've read so far? Okay.
Do you have any update sort of later than it would have went to press about the CAL FIRE ambulance?
Sort of. Tim's been speaking with his contact pretty much daily, and it's moving through the process. There's some documents that have to go to the Board of Supervisors for their approval, and there was a delay in that due to the fires. So the fire, CAL FIRE person in charge of that was diverted to other duties that were emergent due to the fires, but he's back, and he as of, I think it was last Friday, was working on it and sending it to the Board of Supervisors, I believe November, it'll be on the November agenda for approval, and then once that's
done. Yeah, I think the first meeting in November.
Yeah.
I can't remember the date, but.
Yeah, so we're in the, we're getting some help. Just he's aware of it is Bruce Gibson, making sure that flows through or gets placed where it's supposed to be placed. And once that's done, then the wheels will continue to roll in our direction. So.
Okay, and then Mike, do you have an alternate ambulance activity report to show us on the screen, or not yet?
Not that you're talking about the new one, or
the new one.
Here's what he's talking about is, you're all used to seeing the ambulance activity reports, and they're several, many pages long. Tim and Jeremy have been working on a revised version, and we hope to have it ready for this meeting. It's not quite there. So it'll be on your next meeting's packet where it's going to be a more comprehensive report. It's a little easier to see the details that we want to see. So that's
we won't kill as many trees.
Right, right. And it actually will give you some better information that I think is helpful. So that you will see in the future shortly. His report on medications and supplies is okay. I want to mention the Zoll order status. He talks about, we've placed the order, we've done everything we're supposed to do to get the Zoll monitors. And the rep is, got back to Tim. He's very distressed that when he went to the warehouse folks, basically the federal government, went to Zoll recently and, in a short sense, wrote a check and bought everything they had in the warehouse, monitors and ventilators. So all of a sudden, everything's being sent to the FEMA. He's trying to pry four monitors loose from that and get them to us as aggressively as he can. So he hasn't given us a firm delivery date, but he's hopeful he can get them to us maybe in November. So there is a delay, he sent us a loaner, and he said he has several loaners in case we run short, if we have problems, he will keep us going until that occurs. So we're in good shape at the moment. We're not short on monitors.
And will there be any charge for loaners?
No, there's no fee for the loaners. No extra cost for any of that. And consequently, we're not paying. Because I'm taking delivery, so there's no cost at this point on the monitors. So there was a slight delay, hopefully slight, due to related to the national crisis. You've got the information about the calls. Let's see what else might be. He is tracking, there on top of page 12, there's a comment about transports at night from San Luis Ambulance, so he's tracking that. There were three in the month of September. There were three occurrences, and two of them required resulted in a transport. And he's even noted the response times there of when San Luis Ambulance responded into Cambria.
So Mike, do you, oh, this is Lori, do you know, were all of those transports from Cambria, or were they in outlying areas?
That I don't know. Tim can get that first, but I'm not sure.
Well, it sounds to me like based on the time it took to get on scene, it was probably all in Cambria.
Probably, yes. If it was, say, San Simeon or north, it would have likely taking a little longer, I would imagine.
Gloria's question, though, is a comment if we could ask in the future that it gave a rough statement of location within the district.
He is trying to pull some more definitive data on those responses, like where were they coming from and so forth. So he says he has the ability to do that through a system called NOMIS, basically the dispatch records and stuff. So he's working on that. I think that might be part of his new report process, so it'll be a little more.
The other question that I think would be interesting to have, if it's easy enough to get, is from which location, where were they when they got the dispatch call? These numbers look really good, and that's great, but if they were real close to us, as opposed to maybe another call in Morro Bay or whatever, it would be useful to kind of know where their launch point was.
Yeah, and that's our concern. Are they coming from Via Creek, or are they coming from Morro Bay or farther? That is a concern. So he was working on that type of information as well. Monterey, we had one call that is a dry run. He submitted all the paperwork. We have somewhat of a backlog I'm working with. Tim and I are working with the county. It's just a paperwork issue. The county, our county's EMS, has to sign off. They have to sign a form for us to collect on these Monterey calls. And there's been a delay in getting this form signed at their end because they're understaffed and they're busy doing the COVID stuff. So we're working on that. But we have quite a few that are kind of in the hopper. About $15,000 in revenue that we're chasing.
Like with that level of revenue in a band, maybe a call to Bruce Gibson to see if there might be a way to help highlight our invoices there.
Yeah, that's the next step. Yeah, exactly. And I'm even exploring if this step, what the requirements are, because basically it's a signature on a form, like a notification.
Yeah, I think the right person to call is like Fixler.
Right. Yeah.
Because
exactly.
Bruce would only just hand off to him, but you can copy Bruce on an email.
Sure. Yeah, that's exactly what we're working on. Safety gear. He makes a note that the safety gear has been ordered. This was his report, which was prepared end of last week. Since then, it started to come in. We got several cases yesterday. So the safety equipment, the jackets and so forth are starting to arrive thanks to the Project Heartbeat committee.
But Project Heartbeat wanted us to buy them first, and then they'll reimburse us.
They'll get us a check for reimbursement. So we're in short order. So, and he did some very creative shopping, and got some discounts. So the cost is good. In fact, he was able to save enough money that Project Heartbeat is comfortable with kind of the second phase of that, and we're looking to obtain ballistic vests for the crews as well, for protection against active shooter and so forth. So we're not just going to end up with the basic safety gear, but we're going to get some extra special stuff that we've had our eye on. So that's also in the works and within their purview. And that's on the last page of this report. Yes.
Will we be sending a bit of a formal thank you to Project Heartbeat since the relationship is reignited or sort of...
Absolutely. Yeah, that's on my list is to do a thank you letter for them and others that have been so supportive lately. So, yep, absolutely. And that's the end of his report. I don't know if there's any questions about the activity reports that follow that.
Mike, I have a question about what level of activity are we seeing in the month of October?
You know, I was going to ask Tim that this morning because he usually can pull that, you know, fresh off the computer. However, he ran out the door to run a call, so I don't have that information right now. But I could get that for him later when he gets back if he doesn't get back in time for the meeting. And I could just send out a short email with that data about where are we at today. I do know.
I asked Mike a similar question this morning, and we actually had 3 units dispatched simultaneously.
Yeah, this morning it worked out. There was 2 calls, one before 8 o'clock and one right after 8 o'clock. So both units were out. The oncoming crew manned a backup unit so that we still had coverage. So we have a 3rd ambulance in play at the moment. Until Medic 11 gets back to get off duty. So it's fairly good timing as far as we're concerned. But yeah, there was double hit this morning, right before and after 8 o'clock. It does seem to appear to be busy.
Okay, if there are no other questions, are there any questions from the public? Hearing none. We'll move on to Mike's administrator's report. Yes?
I am one of the administrators of Project Heartbeat, and we are in the process right now. You will be getting the funding for the jackets that have come in already. I talked to Tim yesterday, and he said the jackets are here, and the helmets and the lights are on the way in. And they had come, it is a concern for our employees because of active shooters that the ambulance crews have been, it was San Luis Ambulance over in Paso Robles with the shooter that they had, that they ask us to consider the active shooter equipment for them. And we determined that that would be something that they need to have for safety. And so that will be also in the works as soon as we can get the person or the company that is going to be able to supply that kind of protective equipment to our employees. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Very much.
Okay. Mike, your administrator's
yes.
report, please.
All right. Administrator's report, again, you have it in your packet. There's some statistics there regarding the COVID, the current COVID statistics. As far as our staff, we're still very fortunate. Everybody's healthy, asymptomatic or symptom free. So we're in good shape there. We have sufficient supplies of PPE. We did the AFG supplemental grant for PPE was denied for this year, but we're following up with other grant revenues as in the next bullet point of CARES and public assistance grant. So I'm still working on other resources as well. But we finally heard, it's a long delay, we heard back that was declined. It's just there's not enough money for the number of applications, basically, is what they told me. But they're working on we have a representative from FEMA who's working with us to on the next AFG round to help improve our score. Let's see, the big AFG grant, the non-supplemental one, also we were declined on that one, which was for power loading equipment and that type of thing. There was a list of equipment that we had. And again, the next AFG will open in, we have another guest that's coming in. There's a
Mike, that's me in the waiting room at Cecilia, and I think I need to be on the phone as a backup. Oh. I've got an unstable internet connection.
Oh, okay. Well, I just admitted you. Thanks. So anyway, the next AFG grant will open up, we believe, in November. That's what they're saying, telling us, November or early December, and we're already working on that application. And it, I'll let Lori, when she talks about her project, it's in the agenda, the details on that. The CAL FIRE fuel MOU was put on hold because of the fires, but the official that I've been dealing with is back. He just emailed me yesterday saying he's back and he's working on it, so I should have that fairly soon, get that nailed down. The trust, I just completed that where it says the 990 form is due in November, completed that yesterday. As soon as Iggy, he's going to come sign it, we'll send it off, so we're right, we're fine, we're doing great there. And we did get a donation, $1,500.
Nice.
$2,590. Financial reports, you got some details.
Hang on, Mike.
Yes.
Mike. Somebody had a comment?
Oh, I just said how nice it's about $1,500.
Yes.
Oh.
Very, very appreciated donation that came in. Let's see. Under financial, I've got the call volume is down in August. September, sorry. Be a typo now. 9% below normal based on last year's statistics, and transports are down about 15%. However, the ambulance revenue continues to do well at a little over 31% above budget and a little above 20% above last August. So the end
of September.
As of last September, yes. That August should be September. Sorry, I didn't notice that until now. So thanks to Simone's efforts and Kim with and the crews is doing a good job on their documentation. We're doing well, in spite of a decrease in transports and call volume. Monterey I already talked about. And then I go into just details on, as you look on the financial reports, that explains what the miscellaneous revenues are. We got a refund from SDRMA. They, once a year, they assess. They kind of do like an audit or an appraisal of all the districts, and then they adjust. And that was the adjustment that they sent us. Let's see if there's anything else really. General and special tax revenue is down because in September versus what we anticipated, the county was still, a lot of them are still working, the county tax department folks are still working from home. And there's been some slight delay. I will tell you that in this month, it's recovered. We've seen a rebound. We've had three deposits come in that will be reflected on next month's report. I think we're up to around $57,000 this month that has come in from them. So they're catching up. They're getting back in the group, and that's of course helpful. And I've been communicating with them. Miscellaneous expenses are listed there. Let's see. I give a briefing on my update on the performance objectives. Any questions? Barbara, have your hand.
You may have this elsewhere in the agenda and I didn't see, but is there going to be a resolution related to the lifetime benefit for new hires?
Yes. In fact, it's nice that Bill Avery is on the line. He's working on that project right now, and we will have that by the board meeting. Correct, Bill?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, it works. We had hoped to have it by today, but it comes from PERS, and there's a delay. He's trying to get a response from PERS, and they're working from home and yada yada. So there's a delay because he has to get data or information from PERS. Any other questions?
I will say if nobody's going to make any comments about the financial reports, I would like to point out that on page 31, we continue to do better cash-wise than a year ago. We're up 21,000 over September of 2019. So considering that we haven't gotten our COVID-related grants approved, I think it's pretty damn remarkable, actually.
Yeah, and for the year-to-date, I'm glad you mentioned that. The year-to-date, which is basically the first quarter of this fiscal year, July, August, September, I believe, if I misspoke myself here, but we're about $50,000 above what is budgeted for revenue, ambulance revenue, for that quarter.
I think that has a lot to do with bringing billing in-house, and that we have a super duper biller on staff who's just not showing her face.
Yeah, I would really echo that. I think we're incredibly fortunate that this work was done on our billing at the very time where we really would have desperately needed that enhanced revenue. So great job that we're still doing so well.
Any other comments on the financial reports? Mr. Rice?
Mike, talk a little bit about GMAT and what we received this month and the impact that it's going to have in the financials for the month of October.
I've been dealing with the folks from GMAT. And that, you know, you're familiar with, I believe you're all familiar with that program.
I'm not, Mike, so could you do just one sentence on what that is?
Yeah, it's a program that was from the state of California. And the concept was that it would take the different, when we bill Medicare, I'm sorry, Medi-Cal, when we bill Medi-Cal patients, we get a certain amount that's a set amount. And it's far below cost. It's a fairly low amount. And this program was to help fill that gap or provide some relief. So, and this rolls back to, I think, 2014 or so, as far as what I've seen in the records. And so you would turn in paperwork and say, this is, you know, here's what our costs were, here's what we collected, and then they would have a formula and you'd get some money. And the district did. Well, then they did they get to an audit point and they audit this stuff, and there was, they came to the determination based on that audit that we were overpaid, that there was an overpayment. So then we owed them a refund. And so now we're in the process of paying those refunds. As it moves forward, they continue to do that paperwork and they continue to owe us money. So they owe us, we owe them. And, you know, so it goes back and forth. Excuse me. Part of the problem is some of those years, because it goes by fiscal year, even though they say the formula says they owe us money, and they send that to the other part of the state, the legislature and so forth, to fund it, some of it hasn't been funded. So there's funds owed to the district that we have not yet received, but in the meantime, we owe them. So we've been making payments, and I've been trying to figure out, well, when does this all end? Now, thanks to Barbara months ago, she brought to my attention there was a new bill, a new program that was to replace the old program and fix the problem, because everybody's having this problem. It's not just us. This program did more harm than good, essentially. And so it's being replaced by a new program this coming July 1st of 2021. And the old GMG program will sundown over a period of 3 years. And then the new program will take over and allegedly do a better job of this. So we're in this pre-transition period, and we're trying to clean this all up. And I've been working with the folks at GMT to figure this out. Bill, is there more detail? Am I missing something with that?
Well, I just wanted to let the board know that We've received a request for a refund to them, to the state. And how much was it for Mike?
It's about $4,500.
$5,000 something change.
$5,000. Okay. $5,000 that we'll be paying in October.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an unbudgeted line item. So
yes.
When you see the October financials, be prepared that there's a $5,000 expense item that is not budgeted.
Right. And yet at the same time, they still owe us money, which I haven't really been able to determine how much they owe us. it's quite confusing. So, but I'm going to stay on top of it and we'll figure it out. They assure me that it will get worked out eventually.
Okay. Anything else for Mike? No? All right, let's go to committee reports. President's report. I have nothing to report. Property and facilities, Barbara Bronson Gray.
Nothing to report, thank you. No meeting.
Healthcare advocacy and outreach, Cecilia.
Will be covered in other agendas.
Okay. Finance, Bill Rice.
We had a finance committee meeting on October 10th. We covered a number of items. We covered the corrective action plan for the items that were in the management letter from the auditor based on the last audit and checked the status on those. Mike and his team are making progress on those items. There's still some open items to be done, and he knows which ones they are, and he's working towards it. We talked about the GEMT program, which Mike had just reviewed for us. We discussed financial reporting and the automation, further automation of the monthly financial close process. And we have a conference call this afternoon, Mike and I, with the folks at Sherrington to move that process along. We talked about policies and procedures, specifically the finance-related policies and procedures, and we're in the process of reviewing those. We discussed alternative banking arrangements, and we have an item on the agenda later today to cover that, so I won't go into that. And finally, we reviewed the possibility of setting up a credit card acceptance process for the trust. And that's also on the agenda later. So we had a good meeting.
Okay, and just to add to what Bill just said, we have engaged Sherrington Financial as our chief financial officer, and we have engaged the auditors for this fall's audit of last year's financials.
I have a question.
Yeah.
If we're naming a chief financial officer, does the board need to do that?
I'd like to explain that, Barbara, a little bit. They are not being named our chief financial officer. They are providing accounting services and accounting advice to Mike and his team. They like to think of themselves as a chief financial officer, but clearly they are not so designated by the district, nor will they be designated that as such by the district. And any designation or financial advice that's needed by the district will come through the finance committee.
Okay, moving on now to grants.
We have not met in October. We did meet in September. And if it's all right with everybody, I'd like to just discuss what we've been doing with the grants committee when we get to it, agenda item E4.
And Lori, I did put in the minutes from that grants meeting are in the packet.
Yes.
Right after the minutes of the that we approved on the consent agenda. That's where it is in your board packet.
Yeah.
Strategic planning, Cecilia?
The strategic plan will be covered as an agenda item thing.
Okay. Then moving on to regular business, item E1. Barbara?
Thank you. As you know, there has been some concern expressed and some discussion about whether we, in practice, have control over our name as it is on our ambulance and as we use it. And we have concerns about the publishing by staff of pictures of identifiable assets and people, either their own photos or other photos taken by other agencies. And so this is an item designed to give us some discussion on what we should be doing and how we might best do that, ideally for discussion and possible action.
I have a few questions related to this, maybe before we discuss. The first relates to the social media policy and its status, as well as the draft that was attached to the board agenda. It looks to me as though the draft that is, unless my memory is not what I think it is, but it probably is not, this doesn't look exactly the same as the one that we saw a couple months ago. And the material change that I'm noting is that this social media policy has been drafted to put the board in the same category as employees. Well, district board members do not work for the administrator. And I question whether or not it's appropriate. In fact, I'm just going to say I don't think it's appropriate that the same kind, if we want to have policies related to the board's communication with the public on social media or any other media, that's fine. But I think it's a very different thing than people who are being paid to work for the district and the expectation of privacy and using our assets or images. So I guess one, that's a multi-part question. Number one is, what is the current status of the policy? And two is, what was this, is that, am I mistaken, is that an addition that now it says employees and directors everywhere? And I'd like some feedback about that, because it does not seem right to me.
So, Cecilia, my understanding is that directors are guided by the bylaws, and you might be referring to the item 1008. 0.075 social media used, where it says that our directors, what is it, I thought too, the employees and board directors are advised that their speech directly or by means of instant technology, either on duty or off duty, blah, 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 may not be protected speech under the First Amendment. My understanding is that we're board members, we should always say smart and intelligent and appropriate things, but we have the right to say whatever we want. So there are, I think, a lot of things in the policy that, having looked through it in the light of what we've seen in the last 6 weeks or so online, that we probably should go through and give feedback on if we can today.
I'd like to just clarify something for Cecilia and the entire board. It's with these, I'm working an awful lot about this process, and I want to share this with you, and you may already know this, so forgive me if you do. There are several layers of policy. There's your board's bylaws is like Barbara said, you live under the bylaws. That's the highest level. Then there are the district policies, which I've given a draft to Iggy, and it's rather extensive, and he's reviewing all of those. It covers everything from soup to nuts. And that's our district policies, which does address some board things. It kind of is, they dovetail. And then at the third level, the lower, lowest subject level is the standing operating procedure policies, which I shared with the employee group, the employee representatives as well. And this on your, starting on page 45, where it says 10.08, internet, et cetera, that comes from that. This is the SOP policy. So, and it is a draft. So it's a working document in a sense at this point. So I just wanted to clarify that what you're looking at in your packet is the SOPs, it is not your board bylaws or district policies at that higher level or higher tier, just for clarification.
That's actually my point.
Could I just get my questions answered, because I didn't hear either of my questions. One is, what is the status of the policy, and am I correct that this version that we're looking at is different from the one that was given to the board 2 months ago, in that it did not previously address direct or free speech and outside? And is that correct or not?
I believe, if I'm understanding your question correctly, the answer is multifaceted. This is what has evolved since then as the SOP for the employees as a draft, and it still needs work. And that's why Bill Avery and Jeff are here, and they can weigh in on, for example, Bill and I have a meeting tomorrow with the labor representative to try to work on this and come to some form of a final product to bring back to the board for approval.
But a direct answer to your question, Cecilia, is no, it is not in place. It is still in draft form.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And apparently it is slightly different than what was presented to the board at the end of August.
Right. And the understanding at that time was the board, you know, had defined the concept or whatever, but implementation was, they want, what my impression was, they wanted me to delay implementation as we studied it a little more, and we got past the labor negotiations that were ongoing at the time. We didn't want to have both issues on the table at the same time, so that there was some delay as we move forward, and that's what brought us here today.
So I have a comment. And it's more like, I think I need a clarification. So what you're presenting to us is the SOP, or the standard of practice for the employees?
Correct.
Correct? Then
yes.
I don't think there should be any direction in a standard of practice that is targeted towards the directors. We are not employees. We adhere to our bylaws. I don't want to think that the employees will be telling the directors how they should behave. That's not their role, and
understood.
I don't think it belongs here.
Okay. Well, again, that's why this is a draft. I'm looking for that input. Thank you.
So the other thing I'd like to suggest conceptually, and of course we're speaking without hearing direction from our legal or negotiating experts, but I'd like to see us say that no recordings, no photos, no videos will be taken by staff while responding to calls.
Yes.
My personal desire, and it's based on what I understand our fire department does and other similar entities to us. I think that if we do that, we will be allowing our staff to focus on the work at hand, and we will be reducing our risk of either violating HIPAA or violating people's sense of the right to privacy.
You know, and I appreciate that, Barbara, quite a bit. Just so you all know, I've spent quite a bit of time researching this concept of social media policies, either in general or specific to emergency response agencies, public and private. And I can tell you it varies widely, and Jeff and Bill can weigh in on this as well, but it varies widely, everything from having no policy, which is, you know, free for all, do whatever you want, to all the way, the pendulum goes all the way to never, no how, no way, it's never, ever, ever allowed, and then everything in between. We did talk to Stanless Ambulance They do not have a current social media policy. They've been chewing on it for a while, and they haven't been able to come up with a definitive policy that they are comfortable with. So that's, at the moment, it's kind of loosely defined or not undefined. I've spoken with various fire agencies, the same thing, on and on and on. So it is somewhat complex, and I want to do a good job for the board and for our district. So my recommendation at the moment is, even though I understand the sense of urgency, we need a little more time to make sure that we do this and do it well to protect the district and so forth. And like I said, Jeff and Bill can give you more details on the that assessment of risk.
And so, President Fedoroff, if I might interject very briefly to the board, I echo the comments of your administrator. This is kind of still, social media is still a little bit of Wild West, right? And that's why the variance deviates widely between agency to agency. And so you have represented employees. They are viewing this currently, at least from my understanding, as a change. Any policy would be a change of terms and conditions of employment. And we're trying to minimize any friction, and so to have a policy that makes sense to your board, to the employees, to staff, to directors, and it sounds like your administrator needs a little more time. I would support that recommendation based on his meeting tomorrow, especially.
They are willing to talk, so that's a positive step.
So I would like.
I think Lori spoke first.
I'd like to make a comment about this, and this comes from 40 years of healthcare experience. And as a health professional, I think that we are a healthcare organization and that we need to adhere to the highest standard. So because you say it's the Wild West doesn't mean that let's be better than that. Let's have a high standard. And I can tell you that if you are HIPAA compliant, you do not publish a photo, a video, or a recording from a 911 or any type of patient-related interaction. And I think we need to be brave enough to say, this is just a no. Mm-hmm. We don't do it because we respect our community too much to do this type of stuff.
I mean, well, right now, our
depends, and I also think that time is of the essence because I think it's.
I do too.
We have some. I don't think this is something that we can take our time on.
The reason I think it's also important that we own our brand, if you will, and I'm sorry to use that sort of term, but it really is our brand. When our neighbors and friends and constituents see a post that says Cambria Ambulance Paramedics, they think it's the CCHD. That's just the way it is. And people have asked me why some of these pictures, why we are allowing these pictures up there. And does that mean that if they were in an accident, that their car or their loved one's car, if there were a fatality, or the CHP in Paso, why all these things are there and what we as a board are doing about it. And so I feel like our negotiations are important to us, and I thought our negotiations had come to a close. Perhaps I listened wrong. But I feel like there is a time when a district and a board has to say, we are in charge of our messaging. And actually, if we fail to establish that, let's say we are trying, let's just say in 5 years we're trying to pass a tax. And let's say in 5 years the staff have a feeling that that tax isn't well directed. Well, are we going to have two different entities trying to speak for the same organization and confuse what this board wants to do? To me, it's an untenable situation. On top of the fact that I think it is not right, just not morally, ethically, or legally right to show pictures of a car on a rural road that then spurs phone calls to anyone within the age range listed about whether she is alive. That's not what we came here to do as a board. It's not what I ran for. And I feel like it's the first time serving 8.5 years that I have been deeply embarrassed.
Okay, well, right now, I'd like to point out that on page 47, if you look on page 47 of your board packet, paragraph 2 at the top, more or less, says work-related images shall not be taken of any emergency response or training exercise except as permitted by policy or as directed by the operations manager or administrator. And I suppose there would be times when, for patient care purposes, an image might be required to be taken, but it would be using district resources to do it with. And go ahead.
That is correct. There are two that come to mind and are commonly done and are positive impacts on patient care. The example being a high impact vehicle accident. A picture is taken of the vehicle and shown to the ER physician and or surgeon so they can see the mechanisms of injury to impress upon them, you know, the need for patient care. You know, the patient may look okay, but look at what the car, the transfer of energy, kinetic energy, and all that. It's very helpful and appreciated by the ER staff. Not shared, of course. That is kept confidential. It's part of what is, you know, relative under HIPAA for patient care with those who need to know. And that would be allowed in those circumstances to help the ER physician. The other sample or time when I've seen this done is if one of our vehicles is involved in an accident, Tim or myself or supervisor goes out to, you know, the scene to do the investigation, you know, begin the investigation. And of course, we would take pictures of vehicles, damage, and so forth, again, as part of our function for the district. So there are some exceptions to taking, you know, allowable pictures under those circumstances. And like we pointed out in that section, basically that if it's a work-related issue and it's approved by myself or Tim or supervisor, then it would fall under the policy. Anything outside of that would not be allowable. One of the entities, the largest entity in private EMS in the country, AMR, that I'm familiar with, that is their policy, is the employees are not to take pictures on duty unless allowed by a supervisor, unless in those specific circumstances where it is allowed.
I don't mean to interrupt, but President Fedoroff, Mike and I have talked about this. The ultimate, I think, decision with any policy is that everything has to go through your administrator if there's any post of anything. There has to be a gatekeeper. You just can't have people. And I think that's what I'm
looking for in this policy. Right. I don't have a policy that I can, you know, point to that's really not, to be honest with you, a mess. And this cleans everything up. It makes it very organized so that I can, you know, if there is a situation, I can point to policy and I can say, okay, we're going to take corrective action, whatever that may be, to make sure this doesn't happen again or whatever, you know, that kind of thing for our employees.
Might I suggest for the purpose of this being an urgent situation that we set November 4th, so the day after Election Day, for a special board meeting to just address this policy, and then you have 2 weeks basically to get this refined, coordinated, and then represented to the board.
That would be very helpful. And just so you know, by the way, again, I totally appreciate the sense of urgency by the several board members who have voiced, so greatly respect that. There are some elements that I'm being very careful to follow so that we minimize the risk to the district, and Jeff can and Bill can verify this for me. But this is why I set up a meeting tomorrow with the labor representative from the employees is my understanding is when you do something like this, everything I've read recommends if you're going to put a policy such as this in place or any really new policy, that you meet and confer. That doesn't mean that tomorrow they're just going to, you know, that we're not going to have a resolution. But even if I were to come, say, tomorrow to the meeting and say, here's the new policy, and they say, for example, well, it's not acceptable, doesn't mean that I can't move forward, but I have to meet and confer. I'm supposed to. Otherwise, it can cause filings of official complaints with the state, et cetera. There's all kinds of things that can happen if I don't at least give them an opportunity to have a voice in this table. So that's what I'm doing, just sort of to clarify that. And again, Bill and Jeff, you can confirm or deny what I just said.
I think you're correct. I would just, because President Fedorov suggested a date certain, which was November 4th, would you mind confirming that Mr. Avery is available that day as well?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And let me just jump in real quickly and say I agree with everything your attorney and your administrator have said so far on this. I think we'll probably be able to work through this relatively quickly, and we start tomorrow morning. So I don't anticipate huge problems.
Barbara?
I have a question. It's probably for Jeff. Who owns our – how is – what do you see as the name issue? Because as
yes. You can't own the name Cambria. You can't own the name Ambulance. The issues that we're having right now are not posts by random strangers. You can own a Facebook page and things like that. I do believe that all your points, Director Gray, regarding controlling messaging, I think is probably where we need to focus because we're not going to win a battle of who owns your name.
Even though it's an ambulance?
We can try, but I think it's really just a matter of how you control messaging. But your points on posts by other parties, whether staff or members of the community, are construed as coming from the district. Those points are very well taken. So I think we can work through this. And I think we have to let Mike and Bill have their meeting and bring something back to your board that's supported by everyone. And we'll get there.
Mike, would you like to see comments on the suggested policy soon?
Absolutely. I would welcome that if you want to take what is presented here in the packet and then put in your suggestions, whatever. Absolutely, that's why I said it's a working document, and I think
since you're meeting tomorrow,
I would need it to, like today.
Yeah, like close the business today. Well,
yeah,
midnight tonight.
I'm trying to rush
for the better.
Yeah, I do because of the sense of urgency. I'm trying to get this done as quickly as humanly possible. So yeah, if you could each if you have things you want taken out or put in or changed, whatever. Please send them to me by the end of the day so I can present that at tomorrow's meeting for discussion and review and so forth.
I also would like to say that I know I trust what you said about the need to take photos, but I talked to two ER doctors, one in the community, one in the LA community, and they said that while in the past they used to sometimes look at photos, that now they routinely do a massive scan and just find out what needs addressing, and they don't really take the time to need to see photos. So
the problem is, and again, I've studied this fairly extensively previously, actually, for other things, and the problem is that it varies so widely. I will tell you that there's many larger cities, Atlanta, for example, and other places, where they're actually going to body cams on the paramedics that is live to the ER doctor. So the ER doctor can see the patients on scene, and there's all kinds of confidentiality and internet security issues, and oh my goodness, it is a Pandora's box. So we're seeing everything from extremely restrictive, where no way, no how, to the doctor watching a live video of the patient on scene, and everything in between. So that's why it's not a simple answer. I wish I had a simple answer. It's very complex, and I think, as Bill Avery said, and I do believe, we can come to a resolution that will fit as best as possible everybody's needs. Because I will tell you, one of the things what I'm trying to do with this policy is, like Henry said, is be that gatekeeper. Protect the district, protect the employees as well, and protect the patient, of course. And in that nutshell, there are things I would approve. Some of the stuff that they have posted in the past on Facebook has, I believe, benefited the district. It's been good public relations. I've looked at the comments. It's been well received by the community. Not the team calls, but other stuff. And so I want to be that gatekeeper, and some of it I would approve of. If they brought it to me and said, hey, Mike, we taught CPR at this school, and this is really cool, and here's a picture of the ambulance. And, you know, I make sure, of course, that it doesn't violate HIPAA or whatever. There's certain things that I think would be appropriate for them to be posted.
I think, Mike, in my opinion, speaking just for myself, and I am a bit of an expert in communications, the messaging needs to come from the district. It can come from the administrator. It can come from the board. It can come from the staff to the administrator or the staff to the board. But if we have, gee, that's a great message, you can go ahead and post it under a name which is confused as maybe us, maybe not us, then it's a lose-lose. Publish things as the union. If they want to say SEIU number whatever or however they choose to do it, then they have every right to do that. But I just want to be clear. It's that overlapping thing where we have priorities about what we as a board believe the district needs to communicate, whether it's about healthcare, whether it's about our financial needs, whatever it is. And if we are doing stuff in parallel in a small community, it will hurt us. And it will maybe hurt the SEIU representatives as well.
And yes, Director Gray, if I might, Mike and I have talked about this exact issue. And I think that is going to be a central point of his conversation tomorrow with Mr. Avery and the union. Your concerns about confusing the public are well taken and will be addressed.
Yeah, and absolutely, your points are well taken, Barbara. Just so everybody understands too, part of this complexity in the naming is, if you're right, if they were posting SEIU local such and such website, you know, Facebook site and so forth, that's one thing. Just so everybody understands, the phrase Cambria Ambulance Paramedics, when you see that on Facebook, is a phrase that historically has been used as the employees have an employee group, and it's not their union. They represent this employee group includes the non-union part-time employees, and they have their 501c3, they have their own bank account, and it's been around for a number of years. So that's where it's a little bit tenuous, is they are a loosely organized group called Cambria Ambulance Paramedics, or they call themselves that.
We need to take the words Cambria Ambulance off our ambulances then and just have Cambria Community Healthcare District if we are representing somebody else?
I don't know that would really solve the perception by the public. I think I agree with you. The perception is, the confusion is there, and that's what I'm going to address tomorrow, and hopefully we can figure out a solution to that. But that, just so you know, that's one of the things that is on my plate.
I apologize. I'm on the phone, so I can't raise my hand. But is something being considered that you propose to the employees that we have a communication committee that's composed of a employee representative and a board member and the administrator, and that we work together to communicate?
That's an excellent suggestion.
I was going to go directly to that place, if I were to envision a really great outcome, it would be a collaboration. I think that whoever it is that's taking primary responsibility for the content that's been posted, 80% of the time comes up with, I think, very appropriate content. And if that person would collaborate with us and allow for input from Mike and others, I think that's a terrific outcome, because then we really support that work, but do it together.
Brilliant. Yeah. I think that's a positive direction.
And President Fedorov, do you have a proposed time for your meeting on November 4th?
9 o'clock seems to work.
We might all be up kind of late that night.
I won't be.
might not have gone to bed.
Nine o'clock Wednesday seems to work for everyone, so even if we're a little sleepy.
If it would be okay to do 10, I have a court appearance at 9. Would that please the board?
Works for me.
Oh, I'm sure it pleases some members of the board. That's fine. And I'm okay with
sure.
it.
Sure.
Bill, thank are you okay?
Yeah. I'm okay.
Okay.
And Cecilia?
Yes.
Okay. And Lori?
Yes.
Thank you for the accommodation.
Got it. I'll set it up.
Okay.
If you just because I think right now it's my only piece of input, my request as far as the draft is that all references to the board of directors be removed from the policy.
Yes.
Okay. Do me a favor, please, to say, and just so shoot me shoot that to me in an email if you can. Section you're directing to.
Mike, I could do that. I think if you just do a search for every reference of those directors and eliminate that reference.
I can do that. I still want to make sure I don't.
Yeah, just do that, and then. At our November 4th meeting, we'll make sure you did it.
Okay.
All right. If there are other comments.
It might be a good time for public comment.
Any comment, Christy?
Just a couple. The name Cambridge Community Healthcare District came about in 1947. When the district was given its charter by the County Board of Supervisors in 1947, the only entity within this area was Cambria, and that is where the name Cambria Community Healthcare District came from. There have been attempts, motions to change the name of the district to the North Coast Emergency Services District to better reflect what we actually do as a district. However, they have not passed. I would agree totally with Director Miller on, as a healthcare professional, 50 years of experience, you need to apply to the highest standards that you possibly can. And your HIPAA regulations are going to be the ones that should be governing what you're going to do. I would believe that our employees, at least the majority of them, are professional enough and would understand a conversation with them about the liability of taking pictures or posting them on Facebook or whatever issue that they are going to do. And recommending that someone from the employee association be on this dialogue, I think is the best thing that you could possibly do. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, then moving on to agenda item E2. So now if Jeff and Bill Avery want to drop off, you're welcome to do that.
I will be doing that. Everyone have a good day.
Thank you.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so E2, Cecilia.
Yeah, my the internet here is not very good. So my document is swirling. Can you, which one of my items is this?
This is the strategic plan review.
Perfect.
And includes a draft communication document for employees and the public. And I want to say that my 74-year-old eyes weren't sharp enough to see that the communication document was right there, and there were a couple of typos in it, and of course my title is not correct. But again, it's a draft, and I will say this in addition, that a couple of the items that you talk about in that message from the board haven't quite taken place due to the fires and due to the federal government siphoning off the heart monitors. So we need to wait until what you say in there is true to publish.
That would be a good idea. I did receive your input about that, Iggy, and thank you for that. I wanted to present this as very much a draft, but also to give the board a feeling for the type of communication that we might entertain both to our employees and the public. In my experience, strategic plans can be something that you do one day and then get put on a shelf and never looked at again because you check the box. Or alternatively, they really can be very living, breathing documents that are well understood by employees and the public. And we should certainly strive for the latter, assuming that the board is comfortable approving the strategic plan as it's presented. So the items today, I don't think we need to, since we have many times gone through the plan itself. I was suggesting that we formally adopt the plan today and then really consider the forward-looking steps of both communication and tracking of it. And again, just now it's on my screen. Thank you. That's very helpful. But this is something I mocked up. You'll see along the left side of that page, can you scroll up a little bit? The left side is really key because you really want to boil down the work that we did to its core component. And it is around our mission. And these are tracking to the highest level objectives that we've set around emergency services access and promoting the wellness in our community. And we knew that our rank and file employees and community leaders got it, that this is what we're doing and this is what the district is about. That's mission accomplished, very much so. So that's the goal of this piece, however, is disseminated and the timing needs to be right, and it surely probably should be accurate.
Yeah, I mean, it was it seems to be accurate, except that, Murphy's Law came into play, and as a result the fire emergencies that have siphoned off CAL FIRE's resources, and, of course, then the federal government siphoning off those heart monitors. Otherwise, I think it was well done. And as I said, there were just a couple of minor typos that I corrected in the version I sent out. And then, of course, my title needs to be corrected. And hopefully we'll be able to send it out while I'm still that. And if it ends up being December, then it might be another person's name there. But whoever it is, it'll be whoever the president of the CCHD Board of Directors is at the time.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Is page 75 part of what we're talking about, or is it another agenda item?
That's another agenda item. We're right now on page
52.
This is just to approve the strategic plan, and what the information is new since we reviewed the strategic plan the last time is the implementation document, which really is our tracking document. This has some of that detail underneath it. When we say we want to achieve the highest level of emergency services, what did we mean by that? And then we have our bullets around access and quality protocol adherence, et cetera. So, yeah, this is the what. We now have in our implementation document, which this is not it, but for each of these, as well as some of our supporting goals around managing people, managing finances, those are supporting goals. But that implementation document really is your detail of what the board should be tracking against. So, and that document is new, relatively new.
I think page 75 is part of the strategic plan.
75 has to do with bringing additional healthcare resources into Cambria.
Right. So where is that on the agenda? I'm sorry if I sound
it's
confused.
A separate. We have a separate item to discuss the process for primary care.
Yeah, it's E3. E3. Yeah, it's E3. Barbara, take a look.
So that is kind of contained. I think
it is one of the goals of our strategic plan, but the agenda item is also listed separately because I have some ideas that I wanted the board to discuss that were specific to moving forward with that.
Okay, so it sounds like I should hold my thoughts for that rich discussion to come.
I think so. I think what we want is to know that this document reflects the objectives as you want to state it. I think that it's time that the board does. Oh, here, yeah, this probably tracks to what's in the implementation document. I think it's time that the board take formal action to approve the plan, and then we can move forward. Yeah, and these things that you're seeing now, people, finance, and data, these are your enabling strategies. What do we need to have underneath our high-level goals? It's without the information and without happy employees and without bottom line, there's no ability to accomplish the plan. So those enabling strategies are not, you know, minor. They're listed separately. And I think, I'm pretty sure that those of you with primary accountability in your area should see the way that you wanted it written right in there. I got Lori has worked on the wellness section. I think as far as the finance, it's been rewritten to sort of track to what, here we go. This is the implementation plan now that's here. These are all the details in each of the categories. And that was what we were waiting to finish to do the formal approval. And then we have our red bar down there, which was an added element related to COVID-19.
Mr. President, are you ready to entertain a motion to accept?
I am.
So moved that we accept the strategic plan as presented.
Second.
Okay. And the only caution on that is, of course, as I mentioned previously, the communication document needs to be held until, one, we get the ambulance from CAL FIRE, and two, we get the ZOLL monitors, and then that message can be issued to both the employees and the public. Any further discussion? Any comment from the public? Hearing none, Simone, would you take a roll call vote, please?
Iggy Federoff?
Yes.
Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray?
Yes.
Lori Millior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I want to particularly thank Cecilia for doing such a fabulous job on this. This is just absolutely first rate.
Thank you.
appreciate it.
We appreciate it. Okay, now moving on to agenda item E3, which is the review of primary care recruitment and discussing plans for sending an RFP for healthcare operators out while simultaneously evaluating the option of CCHD direct operation of a primary care clinic. You're on again, Cecilia.
Okay, good. So obviously to recap, with the loss of the physician and the feedback from our recent survey of the community, I think we have identified the need for primary care recruitment as being critical to the district. And there are a number of models that could be pursued for doing that. Some of them involve potentially finding partners that we could work with to bring primary care here. And the other category of options relates to the possibility that the district could directly operate a clinic and recruit a physician. The proposal, so we have the recent events and some information about, and this is not unimportant, by the way, this, it, particularly as a public document, but why is it so hard to bring primary care here? There are a lot of reasons why it's just been hard for Cambria, and it's not, I don't think it's a fluke. This is a problem in many rural areas, and it's a trend amongst young physicians that they aren't seeking the kind of 24/7 practice environment with the shingle out that previously you might have had 40 years ago. And our environment is, we don't need half a dozen docs. We really probably just need one or two. So that is an issue. Anyway, I wanted to pause on that for a moment just saying that. And also that the there is a shortage. There is a the wages and terms of employment for young physicians are, I mean, one is very, very good compensation being offered out there. Things like housing loans, it's very expensive, the net-net. And in order to get anywhere, you kind of have to be competitive with them. Okay, keep going. Because we don't need to go, I think we've discussed the issues on the next page about some of our unique issues around isolation. Very similar to the motivation for having an ambulance service. I don't know. My screen just froze, so.
Okay, so right now we're looking at existing primary care in Cambria with CHC, Dr. Gong, yes. And Dr. Griffith.
Right. It was just to remind people where we stand. And I did, I think I shared with you, have a really nice conversation with Dr. Gong 6 months ago or so about his plans. He obviously does not have any imminent plans to retire, but it's weighing on his mind because he, you know, the time will come, and he's very clear that right now he doesn't have a succession plan. He can't finance someone coming to town. So I think he would be very collaborative with us, and it would be a good idea to engage local existing providers in helping us solve this problem. But again, I can't see the video, so what I want to do is probably go to the proposal that I saw. Looks like my video is coming back little by little. There it is. I want to go to the plan. Go just a little further. Here we go. The process. So what I would propose, I do think that at least what we received from survey and other discussions, that people would like to see the district take an active role. I would suggest the following, that we put out an RFP and that we try and cast a very wide net. I don't think that we should, we may not expect to have a lot of responses, but we might surprise ourselves and get a response from someone we did not expect to. So I would send it out broadly, and I would ask for the partners to give us back a proposal that speaks to what would they do and what is their financial assessment of the cost of doing that. What would they be looking for from the district in terms of any financial support they would have, if any, And we would look at those proposals and the financial feasibility, and again, in enough detail to have my screen to dive in. To be able to put that side by side, which with some work that I think we should do internally to sketch out what would be required for a district-operated clinic and what is the ideal model for doing that and what is the financial cost of doing that. So that by next spring sometime, I would expect us to be in a position where we can lay these things all out side by side, know what they would cost the district, and then make some decisions about how we would move forward. There is a gap period, so if anything that we decide is in the best interest of the community involves any additional taxing of the community, that, of course, needs to be on the ballot, either in the special election or in the election of 2022. 2022 is a long way away. We haven't gotten through this current one yet. So that may be, for example, with partners, something we want to address in the RFP, whether or not they would propose any plan that might bring us through a gap period, et cetera. But it will be somewhat frustrating, I think, if we get the responses back and really our hands are tied about moving forward because we are dependent on a vote, but it is what it is. This timeline that's in front of you is actually even in front of me. I've gotten some feedback that is probably a little tight, and I don't disagree with that. I think these dates could be pushed out a little bit. I think in terms of figuring out, whether I've brought a few ideas of consultants, et cetera, that could help us do this. But drafting the RFP, we might want to take our time and put it out in January, to be honest, just because that way the board could review the RFP in detail. And then we're not giving it to outside organizations to complete over the holidays. That's a little obnoxious. So I think it would be reasonable to push these dates out so that we have the RFP draft ready to go by the end of the year, but maybe not send it out until January, maybe get responses back in mid to late February and kind of push it out from there. It seems like a better timeline. So with that,
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So, Cecilia, with your RFP, your deadline, if you say mid-February to end of February, I just worry that given that we're having apparently a third wave of COVID and we still don't know what winter's going to be like, that wouldn't maybe going into March for a deadline be a little more reasonable for an organization to put together a proposal?
Potentially. Yeah. I mean, putting an RFP out in January and giving them 8 weeks would not be unusual at all. Yeah.
I think a 60-day proposal period might be good.
Mm-hmm. There is this is an action item that I am suggesting to you, and there is a commitment of resources that's associated with that. So, I mean, I'd like to have some feedback from Bill and others about, expending the money on the consulting that I think we require. I don't know that this money would go out the door all at once. I think this would, like anything, you just get bills here and there from people who were going to time things.
Bill?
You're looking for $10,000, give or take, at this point, Cecilia?
Up to over a period of 4 months, yeah.
Okay. I think we can find $10,000 in our budget this year. We're running ahead of our projections. We do have some negative things, like we talked earlier today about a $5,000 GEMT payment that's due. But I think this issue is important enough that we need to make sure we find the $10,000, and I think we can to go forward with this proposal because it's so vitally important to the community.
So thanks for that. Other feedback?
Any community comments? Okay, hearing none.
Barbara had
I will. Oh, sorry. Well, I can't see hands. All right, Barbara?
I think it's a terrific plan, and I'm excited about seeing it come to step-by-step fruition. I thank Cecilia so much for what she's done, and Lori, and I think that we should move on.
Okay, well, I'm open to accepting a motion to approve this plan conceptually, including a budget of $10,000.
So moved.
Second.
Second. Okay. Lori seconded. Any other further discussion? Simone, would you take a roll call vote?
Okay.
Iggy Fedorov?
Yes.
Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson Gray?
Yes.
Lori Millior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo?
Yes.
Thank you.
Hey, great. All right, now we're moving on to agenda item E4, Lori Millior.
Yes, this agenda item relates back to the work the Grants Committee is doing towards our next assistance. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Assistance to Firefighter Grant application. And currently what we are looking at is submitting an application. There are two funding opportunities within this grant, one for operations and equipment and the second for vehicles. So our main objective is to submit an application requesting funding to replace one of our to replace an ambulance. And in conversations that Mike has had with a FEMA representative in D.C., the recommendation was that because we have two backup ambulances that are aged with over 200,000 miles, that we should apply or request funds to support the purchase of two ambulances with the hopes that we might get one. And if we're really lucky, we might get two. We're continuing to explore that. I have a phone call in with our regional rep for tomorrow to discuss that plan a little further. But basically what we want to do is ask for funding to support an ambulance at about, with a list price of $110,000 plus the addition of a power cot and loading system for another $40,000. So each ambulance would be about $150,000. In addition, we need to make sure that it's allowable that we can ask for additional equipment within the ambulance, or if we need to put that under the separate or a second application. There's also a need at this time to replace our radios, and so we have been talking with Motorola about that and the grant services they offer. Which pretty much just tells you where there's funding opportunity and that you need to go make application. But anyways, it's been determined that we would benefit from having two frequency or dual frequency handheld radios because of our remoteness and the need to be able to communicate from challenging geographic areas. And so that's another $56,000. So at this time, we still don't have the actual notice of funding opportunity for 2020. We assume it's coming out in November, but that's been delayed. It was supposed to come out in August, and now we're looking at November. So hopefully it will come out before the end of the year. It'll probably have 4 to 6 week turnaround time for a deadline. And with the board's permission, we would like to go ahead and continue to proceed in developing the application for submission.
Did the healthcare district down in Tucson ever get back to Mike or to you regarding their success in getting a grant for an ambulance?
No, they did not.
Well, sort of. The gentleman that I've been dealing with, they're a combination fire and EMS district, and he's been very helpful and cooperative. He said he's going to send me his narratives. They obtained an ambulance this past year through this AFG grant, and he's very willing to share that narrative with us to help us out. He was gone on some large-scale fires in that part of the world, and he just returned, I think, 2 days ago and said he would get it to me as soon as possible. So I'll keep following up with him to get that narrative.
Okay, so Lori, what do you want from the board with regards to this? Simply a recommendation to just that we agree to, for you to go forward?
Yeah, at last month's board meeting, I was asked to put this on as an agenda item for the board's approval. So
okay.
That's what I'm asking for.
Is there any more discussion?
Lori, I have a question. And it relates to Dan Radio. I'm trying to keep everything straight.
Yes.
Didn't we buy these radios a couple months ago?
No. And also, to clarify, some of what's listed on Kim's information about radios is the ambulances. If we purchase one or two new ambulances through this process, they would need radios, the mobile radios. So there's portable radios that we're working on, that concept, but there's also ambulances would need the mobile mounted. So there's radios and there's radios, just so that you know.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but we haven't purchased any radios at this point, no.
No.
Okay, any public comment? Okay, any further board discussion? Then I would entertain a motion to approve the concept as Lori has laid out.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Simone, would you take a roll call vote, please?
Okay. Amy Federoff?
Yes.
Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson-Gray?
Yes.
Lori Millior?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on now to agenda item E5, Mike. This has to do with moving the district's bank accounts from Mechanics Bank to Pacific Premier. Maybe you can remove, it's not useful to me to have everything blanked out and looking at stuff that I'm looking at in paper. Unless someone else really wants that to continue, I'd appreciate it being removed so that I can look at the rest of the board members.
How's that?
Much better, thank you.
Okay, no problem. Let's see, let me talk to get to the right page. What I'm proposing, first of all, just a slight background, a short background. January or so of this year, the Rabobank, which we have used for a number of years for our district bank accounts, transitioned to Mechanics Bank. And we went through that process. It was somewhat challenging, but we got through it to where now we're with the new Mechanics Bank. Since then, Simone and I have had continued challenges dealing with the new Mechanics Bank. I don't want to belabor the details, but basically just errors that were made or different things. And then they started to charge us. We have four accounts, by the way, there. We have four accounts. And they started to charge us a fee, what they call an analysis fee, for each of those accounts to the tune of around $200 a month. And when I questioned about that, well, that's what we do. It's the way, you know, long story short. As I objected to it, they agreed to waive those fees for 3 months, but then they would eventually go forward with them. This month being October being the third month, each of those 3 months, they've continued to charge the fee. And when I contest it, then they remove the fee. And I've had to do that each month of the 3 months. It's just on and on, different headaches. Access to our accounts has been challenging, on and on and on. There's a long list of issues. That being said, I conveyed this to Bill and Iggy at the Finance Committee of my concerns, and they asked me to explore the other local branch here, the bank here, of the Pacific Premier Bank. And so I did. and I've attached, you can see their fee schedule. They will not charge us this analysis fee for our four accounts or any of our accounts, and they're happy, to, of course, to do business with us. So we're proposing to change banks for the district and move our accounts over a period of time. It would take a number of months to transition so that we make sure everything's done properly. We have, there's some things that Simone and I have to do to make that happen, so that, you know, deposits coming into the ambulance income account, for example, from the insurance companies, that they get notified of the change and it will go smoothly. So it would be a process. It would probably take about 3 to 4 months to completely transition over. But we believe that we will end up with a better service and more effective, and save us those $200 a month fees, which may not seem like a lot of money, but that does add up over time. And it's a fee that we, for something that I don't really see why they're charging us that fee, to be honest with you. It doesn't make sense. And Pacific Premier Bank, when I spoke to their representative, she agreed that it doesn't make sense. There's a time when that's appropriate, but we don't fit that model. The Pecans Bank apparently feels that we do. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Any questions, concerns? Barbara has one.
One suggestion I might make is whether you might want to do this in December, when there may be new signatories to the state process.
Good suggestion, yeah, because it will take some time. This is not going to happen overnight, so that way I don't have to do it twice. That's an excellent suggestion.
I move that we approve the transition of our current bank accounts from Mechanics Bank of Pacific to Pacific Premier Bank, as outlined.
Second.
Okay. Cecilia seconded it.
Cecilia seconded.
Yep. All right. Any further discussion? Any public comment? Hearing none. Simone, would you take a roll call vote, please?
Iggy Federal?
Yes.
Bill Wright?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson-Gray?
Yes.
Lori Millure?
Yes.
Cecilia Montalvo?
Yes.
Thanks.
Okay. So then moving on to item E6. So as you all know, we established now probably almost a year ago the charitable CCHD Charitable Trust, and we, in I believe July, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, we received IRS approval for the 501c3 status.
Correct.
So the purpose of this agenda item is to determine a way, or what's our best way forward to try and energize the community to contribute to the trust. So far, we've received a total of $2,590 in donations, and it's pretty well stalled there. We do have I, as the trustee, requested the Cambria Community Council to fund all or part of the used ambulance that Tim Bennis, through his efforts with Cal Fire, identified. And so while we have a meeting this evening at 6 o'clock to defend our proposal, we won't know the results of the funding until November 1st. So I would propose that we launch a campaign sometime in November timeframe to solicit donations. And one of the ideas that I had was associated with us trying to get primary care to the community. Now, the trust is only to be used, pardon me for that phone call here. Ah, good. My helpers answered the phone quickly. The trust was put in place for funding only two things. One, capital type items. Two, equipment. So the startup costs associated with bringing a primary care clinic to the community, including establishment of Wi-Fi, establishment of whatever the proposals might suggest, I think would fit into the capital nature of trust donations. That was just an idea. If anybody else has any other ideas, I'm very, very open to them. I just think that we need to have a focused campaign to try and solicit donations from the public to assist the entire community in healthcare and well-being. Now, embedded in here is this notion that we could solicit donations via credit card, and Mike found a company called QGive, and they charge about 4% for most donations by credit card, except with American Express, they charge almost 5%. But this would allow smaller donations to be made, and it would simplify matters. QGive then basically takes care of depositing the funds in the trust account, sending a thank you note, if I understand it correctly, to the giver, and also giving them a receipt for their charitable donation. But at this point, I would like to open it up for discussion by the entire board.
Question, what do you think and maybe just to bring us up to speed, what do you think the community knows about our trust? And I guess part of my question gets at an educational issue. You know, occasionally I've seen people comment on social media or whatever that they believe they've paid for a lot of what we do through their taxes. And so have we done any groundwork to help the community understand that their taxes don't cover the cost of operating the
right.
ambulance?
Well, obviously not effectively enough, because I did send out it's here at my fingertips, but I don't know if it has a date on it. It was a newsletter earlier this year talking about having officially opened our Cambria Community Healthcare District Trust. So there was a paragraph there. It's on our website. So it did go out to everybody that gets water bills. But I think what I'm suggesting here is that we would do a mailing similar to what the Cambria Community Council does, and target this so that people can have an envelope that they can use to donate with, they can have a way to donate using credit card, and so on. And it would give them several projects maybe that we are trying to raise funds for that their taxes right now are inadequate to cover.
And just to piggyback on that, I sent out multiple notices through social media and our website and so forth, just to, as an educational piece about the trust and what it's for and what it, and so forth. And if I can put in a plug for the QGive, it's similar to what you see on social medias and other places like Venmo and those kind of things. It puts a connection on our website, and it's also, there's a downloadable app for smartphones and so forth, to where someone can donate $5 if they want, or $100 or $1,000, whatever it is, they can just tap, click, and it's transparent. The QGIS company, and I included some information in your packet on them. They specialize in entities such as ours, nonprofits of different types, including government nonprofits, and they seem to have a quality product. And there's no cost to the district unless there's a donation made. So wouldn't cost. There's no start. They're waiving any startup fees. There's nothing. No cost to get this going. And then if someone makes a donation, the pieces, they subtract their fee and they send them the tax letter, the thank you letter, and deposit the funds into our account. And I get it. And then I would get a notice, of course, that there's been a donation made. So it's transparent and it makes it convenient. If you've seen anybody use GoFundMe or Venmo for a fundraising, whether it's relief for someone who's ill or whatever, people donate $5, $10, $20, and next thing you know, they have thousands in the account. It's a very effective tool these days. A lot of people like using these tools to make their donations, and it just makes it convenient, very convenient and easy on us. We don't have to do hardly anything to make this happen other than obviously.
Okay. Barbara has her hand raised.
Yes.
Thank you. A couple of things. Earlier this year, working with Mike, we did a multi-phase marketing plan for the trust. And the item phase two has not occurred yet. We haven't done it yet. And that was to work very directly with presentations or going on Zoom to the Rotary Club meeting, the Lions Club, and we have done the Canterbury Community Council most recently. We did do that one. But we haven't fully done that phase. And I suspect that the Canterbury Community Council has an outreach request letter coming out this year as well.
No, they do not. They don't plan to solicit any more donations. They solicited them earlier this year. And they decided not to go back out for additional donations because they still had plenty of money from the earlier donations related to the food project.
So the other thought I have is that it's a $3,500 cost to do this mailing. And the only reason I know it so well is that recently through the campaign experience, we have sent something out very similar to this, and I know the cost exactly, and I extrapolated it to the including the San Simeon community as well. So I think that there are still things we can do that will not cost us money, and that in the early part of the new year we may understand better what our specific costs might be for other things. But it's a tough time out there, and having not talk to some of the fundraising groups in town, I think spending the $3,500 now, given some of the other stresses on our budget, might not be so good.
Okay. Any other comments?
May I speak?
Yes, you may.
It's Lori. Just funny. I didn't put my makeup on today, so that's why you're not seeing me. So my thought is that I'm not quite sure what we are going to be asking for, and I would really like to see more specifics that people could really grasp onto. I mean, we do still continue to have equipment needs. We do have facility needs, and I think I'd like to see that more fleshed out. And I also think that if we're going to do it, I would like to think that what the product we put out as a pamphlet or as a mailer had a look that we can be proud of and doesn't look rushed or amateurish. And then as far as using this company, it bothers me greatly that they would be the ones sending a thank you note to members of our community. I know the Cambria Community Council, when I did a donation, I got a personal thank you note from one of the board members. And that meant quite a bit to me. So I would not like it if I just got a form letter saying thank you and here's your tax donation information. I think we need to add a personal touch to this.
That's a very good comment. And just to clarify, I didn't drill down that deep. When I spoke with their representative, when they sent out the automatic thank you letter and receipt for the tax purposes, it's actually one that I would create. It'd be a customized on our letterhead and everything. They would just do the function, or they notify me and I do it personally, either way. That is an option. I like that they get a personal contact, you know, from the district.
I had a handwritten thank you note, which is very rare, but very nice.
Well, and that could be done with QGIF. They would just, instead of it being an automatic generated letter, they would just send me notification and I would do the personal, which is fine. We're not going to get, I shouldn't predict, but I don't think we're getting 1,000 a day, you know, unfortunately. I don't think the load is untenable. So yeah, that's a good suggestion. That's what I've done up till this point. Every time the donations we have received, they got a personal letter from me and a thank you, a phone call, and so forth. So that could be done. This just facilitates the donation part, makes it easy and streamlined for people. Like I said, they can donate $5 or whatever. A lot of people right now they have to write a check which is a typical thing, and that. I have one individual who has told me he's going to write a check, and that was 4 or 5 months ago. And it takes a certain amount of time and effort to write a check and drop it off or put it in the mail. And sometimes that's people get busy and distracted. It's not on purpose.
Go ahead.
Okay. Have we considered having a Venmo account that people can directly deposit into?
That's one option. This is a little better because it actually puts a window on our webpage for donation. Venmo would be a little bit different. And Venmo, they charge it's a different fee structure, let's put it that way. There are fees involved and things that depending on how it's done. This is, from what I've seen, I looked at GoFundMe, I looked at Venmo, and I looked at QGIF. QGIF is the smoothest, slickest one that I've seen.
Might I suggest that we split this matter into two pieces? The first piece is the development of the brochure and the mailing, which might take a couple of months and maybe into January or so. The other piece would be for the board to either approve or not approve the use of QGIF and the installation of the QGIF donation button on our website. So if any of you want to make a motion sort of like that, that would be great. If not, it's another motion.
Mm-hmm. I would like to make a motion that we authorize Mike to proceed with the implementation of the QGIF software.
I would like us to understand that we would use the option of the personal thank you note or letter from Mike versus the QGIF automatic generated thank you note.
Okay. And then I heard a second. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on. I'll wait I shouldn't discuss until there's a second.
No, Barbara, go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, there was a second either by Lori. I think it was by Lori.
I seconded Cecilia's, and I'll second Bill's as well.
Okay. All right. Barbara?
Just a caution that we be careful about what our pitch is. My experience with the district is that we always need a lot of things. And by stating a lot of things, we haven't typically raised much money. I think that a thoughtful campaign thinks about what's going on in people's lives, what would be most important to them to fund, and that I think we should have that discussion so that our pitch is welcomed by the community, understood by the community, and resonates with them, and that it not just be, we're poor, we always need ambulances, radios, equipment, this and that, but that we really establish something that would be a meaningful gift at the holiday time.
Well, I think we're delaying now actually putting something out until after the first of the year based on the discussion I just heard.
If we put money into putting something on our website where people can give, or we do it through social media with that system, we're going to have a pitch. It's not going to just, people are
Think that's not true, Barbara. I actually think putting the software on may or may not require any pitch at all. The website's up and running, right?
Right, but how many
people
go to our website without being encouraged to go there?
So it's a separate issue. That's all we're saying is that it's a separate issue, is to get the technology on there, let's vote on that, and then I think he was proposing that we then kick up a discussion about solicitation, the timing for that, and the strategy for that. Is that right, Iggy?
Yes, that's correct.
If it's on our website, there's going to have to be some words.
Right. And down at the bottom of where there's a discussion, if you go to the homepage for CambriaHealthcare.org, there is that statement about you can give to this 501c3, and then it says at the bottom, methods. And all Mike would have to do is to modify the methods to include QGive and have them directed to the QGive button.
But see, I'm not opposed to the equipment, but what my concern is that we have a misdiagnosis happening. The diagnosis is that Cambrians don't wake up in the morning and go to our webpage, and Cambrians don't wake up in the morning and think about making a gift. So I think our diagnosis is that we don't have a way of channeling people into giving even over the holidays, which is what I think probably sparked your interest in doing a mailing. There may be a need, if we're going to do this now and it takes up valuable time with everything else going on, and I'm not against it, but if we're going to do it, we need to make sure that whatever we say on our website is specific or interesting enough so that people are moved to give at this time, and secondly, that we find a way to drive people to the site.
Well, would a press release by Mike sent out to the Cambrian, to CambriaCA.org, to New Times, to Estero News, and posted on Nextdoor, posted on Facebook.
The problem isn't where, first of all, a lot of people aren't reading the Cambrian. We've got a lot of challenges even with CambriaCA. It's that we don't have one great vehicle, but I think that we don't have a really great message. Like if someone said to me, if I gave you $500, if I gave the health district $500, where would it go? What would it do? I think most of the members here could think up something really great, but I don't think we have a cohesive message, and I don't think we know really what our funding priorities are. I think we could come
up. Right, and that's stage two, as Cecilia just pointed out a few minutes ago. That's what we're going to give some thought to. But in case anyone is interested in making donations between now and the end of the year for tax purposes, maybe just a general call for donations is better than nothing. But in terms of putting together a proper brochure, I think, as Lori put it, that we can be proud of, that's not going to happen, I don't think, between now and the end of the year.
What is the monthly cost, again, of having the software on our...
Zero.
Zero. No startup cost, no monthly cost, unless a donation is made. Then they take a percent, 3 point something. Unless
there's basically it's 3.95% plus 30 cents. Or 4.95% plus 30 cents if it's American Express.
So if someone writes a check for $5,000, we'll have a more significant cost, obviously.
No, if somebody writes a check for $5,000 to us, there's no cost. This is only for credit card via QGIV.
I misstated. If someone gives us $5,000 via credit card, then we have...
It's the same cost.
Yep. Yeah. They would take a percentage of the 3.9.
That's correct.
No, but I'm saying if it's the larger the gift, sure, the more we lose through the system.
That's right. 4% of 5,000 is more than 4% of $50. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You are correct.
Yeah, those fees are largely, as I understand it, covering costs that are charged by the credit cards themselves. And because American Express charges exorbitant fees for transactions, that's why it's higher for them.
Yep, exactly. Okay, so we have a motion to put QGIV, enable QGIV on the CCHD website. It's been seconded. It's been discussed. Is there any public comment?
Yes. Who is the administrator for the trust?
I am the trustee, Fedoroff. Whoever happens to be the president of the board of directors of the CCHD is then the trustee for the trust.
Okay. And the objectives that are set up for the money being spent, if I understand it correctly, there's two general categories that you're going to use the money for?
Yes, it can only be used for equipment and the other...
Capital
type expenditures and equipment. That's
not general operating funds.
Yeah,
no general operating funds.
The reason that I'm asking that is because I believe that that's what people are going to want to know what they're giving the money specifically for.
Yep.
They're already being taxed. Not enough, I will totally agree, because we just got our tax bill, and the residents of the district, if you are an improved property, are paying $111 every 6 months to keep the agency going. I also would remind you that you have an agency already. You have Project Heartbeat, yet you still... connected directly to the Cambria Community Healthcare District. We used to have an app that, and the information about what Project Heartbeat is about and how it works. And we currently have over $145,000 in that account. And several people within the community are very familiar with Project Heartbeat because it's been here since 1977. And it will continue, people can continue to make donations to it, but they go to the San Luis County Foundation to do it. And that is happening. So I just wanted you all to be aware of what that is and how that works in setting up an additional trust mechanism for people to donate money to.
Thank you. Barbara, since you know the background and you were instrumental in establishing the trust, maybe you could just say a few words about that.
Well, we created the trust, as I understand it, because we wanted to be in a position to specifically state what our needs were and to have some control over the money ourselves. The challenge with Project Heartbeat, even though everyone was always and will always be very grateful to Project Heartbeat for what it does and its commitment to contributing to the district, it's harder to, we have to request those funds and they have to be a fit. And so the idea was that by creating our own trust, we we could solicit and inform the public ourselves, and we could benefit from being able to make those choices sometimes perhaps in a more timely way. We need all the my personal belief is any entity that is raising money for us is a good thing. It may not necessarily be something that's on our website, but we appreciate it and we need it. Did I answer your question, Nikki?
Yes. I just wanted everyone to be aware that that tonight I will be defending our request to the Cambria Community Council for $35,600 to fund the CAL FIRE ambulance and the refurbishment that is required, repainting and installation of radios and so on and so forth. And that there was a letter received from Christy Jenkins to the Cambria Community Council stating her opposition to the council funding this, but hopefully she has a better appreciation that the CCHD itself is not asking for this funding, that it is in fact our trust and I as the trustee that have requested the funds. So, but it's a matter that I hope they will fund, and just as Project Heartbeat, 2 years ago, I guess, contributed $40,000 for an ambulance that turned out to be very defective and fraudulently presented to the district as having only 90,000 miles on it when it had more like 250,000 miles on it. But anyway, we're using the funds that were given to us by Project Heartbeat in our ambulance procurement account to pay for the ambulance that we ended up, the new ambulance that we ended up replacing that junker with. And fortunately, we got most of the funds that the company that we bought it from, we got most of those funds back and placed them in that account from which now we draw to pay for unit number 20.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, yes.
I don't think that the district means to say that Project Heartbeat was responsible for the challenges we faced with the purchase.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But I want to assure Project Heartbeat that we are using the funds for the intended purpose, and that is to pay for ambulance acquisition. Okay, well, if there's no further discussion, I would then call for a vote on the motion that places QGIVE on our website with the caveat that any donations get thank you letters personally sent by Mike to the donors rather than automatic. So, Simone, would you take a roll call?
Iggy Federoff?
Yes.
Bill Rice?
Yes.
Barbara Bronson-Gray?
No.
Did you say no?
No.
And she says no.
Lori Millior?
Was that yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Cecilia Montalvo?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so it's 4-1. And then at some future point, Mike and I will bring back, maybe with input from other board members who have the desire to input, we'll bring back a more detailed project for soliciting contributions. But in the meantime, we'll have to rely on generalities since we don't have a good handle currently on specifics.
Iggy, if I could jump in for just a second. Tim has returned from serving our community on the front lines. And he has an answer to your previous question about where we are as of today as far as call volume, if you'd like him to answer that question.
Why don't you go ahead, Tim?
We've had a total of 68 incidents, 24 transports, and 4 Monterey County calls this month alone.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yep, which is impressive.
Okay. So now our last agenda item, E7, Cecilia. This is the COVID-19 response and CCHD activities.
Yeah, this is not being presented for action, but rather maybe just a brief discussion. I think we're all very cognizant of the fact that there are concerns now out there that the relief that we were feeling as we moved into a lower tier status as a county, we may end up having the experience that many other geographies have had, which is the virus subsided, and then in the fall, it has, in the colder parts of the country, it has absolutely started to get much worse again. City in New Mexico, which has the highest new case rate in the country. So it really makes me pause as we realize that I think COVID is going to be a part of our mission for quite a while and will impact the lives of our residents for quite some time, unfortunately. So I do see a continued role for our community leader forum. And the two things that we were most interested in doing on our last call, the first was to facilitate this town hall with Bruce Gibson and representatives from the Department of Public Health. And we've not been able to do that yet. Barbara offered to help paying Penny and see if we can't get that moving. I think particularly if it starts ramping up again, that the community would certainly really appreciate it. So we will keep on working on getting that done. But the second one, which is more of the discussion item, and I say discussion because I would propose that this be explored, what's your thought, while we don't truly know what the exact timetable is for a vaccine, I do not think it's too early to begin thinking about how we could facilitate distribution in our town, particularly since our physician offices are limited. And, I think one step is to speak with the public health department about what work they're doing in preparation for vaccine distribution and what process do they envision going through to get it out into the community. And then knowing whatever it is that they're doing, we could potentially start to think about how we plug into that. I mean, it could mean, I really don't know what's involved. We could work through existing providers and try and find, even wonderful retired nurses, we won't name any, that people who might be willing to help administer vaccines in the community. But it's not too early. It's funny, my husband has a technology company, has nothing to do with healthcare. But I learned yesterday that FedEx they are sidelined right now in major discussions with the federal government over how they're going to transport vaccines. So those conversations are absolutely happening. And I think we should try and get ahead of it. So any thoughts that people have, any other people that you think we should talk to, just would welcome your thoughts.
Anyone?
Well, this is Laura. I just think the county public health is going to be really our point person as far as advising us how they envision it, because they're in contact with the state and federal government. So,
yeah, I think they're our first point of contact.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the business starts to feel a little bit like testing, though, Lori, which is, we know that because of where we are and the size of our community, it wasn't a place where they could make sense of having the county could do. And I just worry that we're going to be in the same place for the vaccine. And I suspect, we'll find out, I suspect they're going to want to use a network of directly, county-operated vaccine centers. And also, I think they'll probably want to supplement that in communities like ours, but we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get that thought. I mean, absolutely, it's down. It's down.
Barbara?
I have an idea. What if we crafted a letter to Dr. Borenstein that expressed our interest in being involved early on and helping on the county level as well as in Cambria, asking some of the questions you just so well iterated, and sent on behalf of the district to see what kind of response we would get and whether we can be more involved.
Cecilia, would you be willing to do that?
I would. Appreciate that idea.
Yeah.
Finally, also because there have been conversations with the County Public Health and myself, they're considering, and this comes from the state on down, using paramedics and EMTs to help with vaccinations. So that may be something that we could provide a resource to do vaccinations here in our community.
Okay, well, my suggestion would be to craft a letter between Cecilia and Mike, and then bring it forward to the board for approval at our next board meeting. Does that sound reasonable?
November 4th?
Sure. Yeah. Is it possible we could do that on the 4th so it's not a whole other month?
Oh, well, yeah, you could do it by the 4th, sure. So great. We have two agenda
I'll put
items.
It done. With Mike.
Yeah.
Great, Mike.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. I don't think there's any motion that needs to be made here. I think we'll just go do that. So that's it for our agenda. Does anyone have any agenda items for our next regular meeting, which you'll note is scheduled for the 18th rather than the 11th? Back in January, or maybe even last December, when we established the 11th as the date, that was prior to COVID-19, and it's just I'm more comfortable holding it on the 18th rather than the 11th. It gives more time to process everything that has to be processed to get ready for it.
Didn't we move? Didn't we change our board meetings to Thursdays or no?
Well,
I thought we were doing this at 9 today because somebody had a conflict.
Right, we tried, but we actually don't have a set date and time. It's set every board meeting.
Right.
So I am suggesting that the next board meeting be at 9 a.m. on Wednesday, November 18th. That's open to discussion, of course.
Oh, I forgot. That's right. We left you go. Well, that would work for me.
Yeah,
that
the bylaws have been changed to say we're going to meet once a month at a...
Once a month.
Yeah. A date and time TBD. And so now I'm trying to determine it.
The 18th at 9 o'clock in the morning works for me.
Works for me.
Barbara?
Works for me.
Okay. Works for everyone. Good. Thank you. How about agenda items for that meeting? Okay. Yes.
Well, we will want to have the primary care initiative, I think, on every agenda for the next couple of months because we're going to walk through that process that we just approved. So let's be sure that that's on there. We discussed previously having periodic, and I don't know what the right, maybe it's a quarterly thing, but we should have a periodic update on our strategic plan process, maybe quarterly. That shouldn't be a monthly thing.
Okay. But also, I'm sitting here with a stack of proposed policies. I would like to solicit other board members' help for this aged slow reader. And so I will send an email to the rest of the board members saying, here are the tabs. And then I will solicit
someone to say, yes, I will review that particular subject, if that's okay with you, because then in November, we're scheduled to bring the draft policies to the board and try to get approval.
Okay.
Is there an indication in these policies of what's new, or is it kind of a wholesale?
It's all new because guess what, Cecilia? We didn't have any policies.
Oh.
So, I mean, there were policies that were embedded in the standard operating procedures, but Mike tried to ferret those out, and he finally gave up and finally said, you know what, why don't I use something that's been proposed and used by a variety of special districts in the state. Mike, maybe you can give a little bit more background on it.
Yeah, it was, in short order, that it was a daunting task trying to pull together. I had pencil written and scratched out pages, all kinds of stuff, and couldn't make sense or head or tails of it. So I kind of, like in football, fell back and punted and I got a template of policies that are used by, like Iggy said, a great majority of the special districts. And then I went in and modified it or whatever to fit us. Like, for example, there was a policy on a naming of parks. Well, we don't name parks, so I took that out. that kind of thing. So I customized it to fit what I thought met our needs. It's a fairly large document, but it's very complete, comprehensive, and legally vetted. And I presented that that whole basket to Iggy, and apologize. I think I kind of buried him in these pages. There's I think 180 pages of total. rather large.
Yeah, he was kind enough not to actually put page numbers on them.
Yeah, I didn't put page numbers on purpose because, you know, anyway. So that's what he's dealing with, and obviously could use a little help wading through that. Okay. But I think they're good. I think it's a good start, and we'll end up with something that we can all be proud of and is a workable, useful document. And this is I talked about earlier. You have your top board bylaws, the middle, and then the bottom is the SOPs. This is the middle of the sandwich.
Yeah, and there are policies dealing with the board of directors, and I probably will weed those out because I have a feeling that our bylaws cover that subject
right. Well
enough. So okay. Right now I have primary care initiative district policies for potential agenda items for November 18th.
With Iggy, I'm trying to recall a year ago, which is dangerous. The results of the election, new officer thing, was that a November report or a December board item?
December. Is that right, Barbara?
Yes.
Okay.
She's nodding, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because you see the results aren't certified until beginning of December.
Yeah. Right.
And we have to wait until they're certified.
Copy that.
Okay. All right. Hearing no other items, the meeting is adjourned at 11:32. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.